The Romans named it after the god of war, whose colours were blood, and the fascination with Mars has never died. The planet is there in myth, in astronomy, in fiction, and even in trade. My cousins in the crane business call themselves up in the sky the men from Mars. It's something I've lived with humbly for years. In America right now, the obsession with Mars is particularly strong, with Elon Musk promising to put 1 million Earthlings up there in the next 20 years, a project he's offering to fast-track with his own sperm. My guest today, David Barron, explores the origins of this obsession in his book, The Martians, The True Story of an Alien Craze That Captured Turn-of-the-Century America. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David.
You write that Mars possesses an undeniable aura of mystery and romance, an allure not fully explained by its physical reality. Why does it? Why has it always captured our imagination? Is it simply because it's red?
Well, so in ancient times, that was part of it. It does have a strange red or sometimes orange or salmon color. It because it comes around close to Earth every 2 years and 2 months, it flares to prominence briefly during that period, and then it fades away into the background stars. So it was known from ancient times to be quite odd. But I really think the main reason it captures our attention today is because of the period I write about from about 120 years ago, because it was at the turn of the last century, the 1890s and the beginning of the 20th century, when Mars just captured the world's imagination. I mean, the title of my book, the subtitle says, An Alien Craze That Captured the Turn of the Century America, but it really captured the world.
And we live in the shadow of that huge uprising of popular enthusiasm for the planet. Still, 120-something years later, it's kind of still here.
Oh, absolutely. The ripples have continued down to today. So this, for me, it really began because I was born in the 1960s. And as a child, there seemed to be Martians everywhere in popular culture and cartoons on TV. In the United States, there was a popular sitcom called My Favorite Martian in the 1960s. There was, of course, science fiction about Martians. There were Martians in movies. And I grew up and became a science writer. I write about astronomy. And I started to wonder, where did that all come from? And when I looked at newspapers from the very beginning of the 20th century, I just was floored by what I discovered, because before Martians were staples of science fiction, they were truly believed to be scientific fact. You could open the New York Times and other serious newspapers from that era and read about the Martian civilization.
And we will open those newspapers. But one thing, David, that really fascinates me about these depictions of Martians is that these Martians are always intelligent. They're not primitive.
Well, that was part of the theory. So Mars, let me back up a minute. I mean, the main proponent of this idea that Mars was inhabited by a civilization was an American astronomer named Percival Lowell. And he had quite an elaborate theory, but it fit with other ideas of Mars at the time. And one of the widely held views about Mars was that it was an older planet than Earth. It formed before Earth did. If life emerged on Mars, it probably emerged there before Earth. And therefore, if you imagine that life moves in lockstep toward civilization, well, then Mars probably had civilization before we did. So the Martians were thought to be ahead of us in evolution. They were smarter. They were more technologically savvy. And also, for other reasons, they were also thought to be better than us in terms of their moral standards. They were more peaceful than us. People thought the Martians were...
Ooh, they could also be dangerous. You know, they came to Earth commenced a war. But look, let's roll back a bit, because
sure.
From your book, it seems to me that the principal evidence for this notion that Mars was an earlier civilization was the observation in the 1870s by an Italian astronomer who saw what he thought were channels on the surface of the planet. Now, tell us about that.
Sure. So his name was Giovanni Schiaparelli. He was quite a renowned astronomer. He headed the observatory in Milan. And in 1877, when Mars made a particularly close approach to Earth, he decided he was going to study it night after night to make a detailed map. And what Schiaparelli saw was a landscape that seemed sort of Earth-like. It had dark areas and light areas that he thought were oceans and continents. But there were also these very fine lines that were exceptionally straight. And he imagined they were waterways of some sort, channels. In Italian, the word is canali. Well, when that was translated to English, it was mistranslated to canals. And people started to talk about canals on Mars, which at first was sort of a joke. People knew that that was a mistranslation. But Percival Lowell, the American astronomer who came along in 1894 with his own theory, said they are canals, not canals for navigation, but canals for irrigation. And he believed that the Martian civilization had built a global irrigation network to bring the only water that was left on the planet, and that was in the polar ice caps, down to their farms and their cities. And this is what the Martians had to do to survive on a planet that was running out of water.
So the canals, so-called, in inverted commas, they are really the only evidence, is this right, the only evidence of this civilization that had once flourished on another planet?
Well, it certainly was the main evidence. But it wasn't just that their lines were there. They also seemed to come and go with the seasons, mysteriously. So what could that be? Well, if they were like mountain chains or something, that wouldn't occur. You'd always see them. So what are these strange lines? Lowell said, well, you're not seeing the water in the canals. The canals would have to be many miles wide to see that. What you're seeing is the vegetation growing on the banks of the canals. And so for that reason, you're seeing them, the vegetation green up in the spring and the summer, and hence the lines appear. And in the fall and winter, as the vegetation dies off for the year, they fade away. And so in that way it fit. But there were once the idea was out there, I mean, some people believe that the Martians were sending signals to Earth. And so that also, whether they were strange lights on Mars, or the inventor Nikola Tesla, who in 1899 thought he'd picked up radio signals from Mars, that all added to this mania.
Driving this mania was the figure of Lowell. Tell us about Lowell. He was an ornament of the Boston rich. Was he an amateur, or was he actually a scientist?
Well, today we would call him an amateur, but at that time, you know, astronomy was just starting to professionalize, and quite a few astronomers did not have a strong academic background in the field, and there were actually a lot of gentlemen astronomers who were really lawyers or doctors or businessmen who had the money to buy their own large telescopes, and they added to discoveries of what's in space. So Lowell was not a professional, but being an amateur was not necessarily seen as something terrible or
oh, no, not at all.
Right. But he was extraordinarily wealthy. The Lowells of Massachusetts made their fortune in textiles at the very beginning of the American Industrial Revolution. All the Lowell men pretty much went to Harvard University. So Lowell graduated in 1876. And for a while, he was a well-known author. He traveled the world. He spent a lot of time in Asia. But he came to astronomy quite late. It wasn't until he was getting close to the age of 40 that he fixated on Mars, that this was going to be how he would make his name, which, you know, being a Lowell, you kind of had to prove yourself worthy. And he was going to do that through his study of Mars.
So the idea is there. There is already an enthusiasm for Mars. There are these extraordinary theories about, you know, dying civilizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then along comes H.G. Wells.
Right. So you said earlier that the Martians were not necessarily friendly and peaceful. And of course, H.G. Wells famously, so he was at that time in the 1890s, he was a quickly rising star in literature. He had written The Time Machine, and he was making a name for himself, and then he writes The War of the Worlds, which was based on what astronomers were seeing. They were seeing evidence of life on Mars, and so he used his own imagination, again, with this idea that the Martians were ahead of us in evolution. In fact, his Martians, which were these disgusting, hideous creatures that were basically, they looked sort of like a jellyfish or an octopus. They had just one gelatinous head with tentacles coming off.
And haven't artists loved them ever since?
Yeah, right. You know, and but of course they got around in these tripods, these machines that they rampaged across London when they came to Earth. But H.G. Wells was imagining what humans might become in the future as we rely more on technology. We basically were just going to become brains with tentacles that we can use on machines. But that was H.G. Wells' idea that the Martians were potentially had their eyes on Earth to come invade us. Remarkably, I mean, when I started writing my book, I thought, well, probably that's what a lot of people thought. That was hardly ever discussed, the danger from the Martians. By far, I mean, 99% of the references to Martians was that they were creatures we would want to come to know and, in fact, emulate, rather than monsters we should fear.
And Lowell kept going, kept lecturing, promoted writing poetry about Mars, to the extent that the New York Times in 1906 had a banner headline, "There is life on the planet Mars. Professor Percival Lowell, recognized as the greatest authority on the subject, declares there can be no doubt that living beings inhabit our neighbor world." This is just extraordinary. This is all bunkum.
Right. Well, and that's one of the reasons I just loved writing this story, because it has so many strange elements to it. It all started out sort of whimsical. I mean, a few years before that, you had Martians showing up in Broadway plays and vaudeville skits and in silly songs. But by 1906, 1907, the idea had really taken on a certain gravity, and people began to believe it was pretty much proven. The Wall Street Journal, of course, another very serious conservative U.S. newspaper, in 1907, at the end of the year, said the biggest news of 1907 was proof of life, of intelligent human life on Mars, they said. So Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone, who by the early 20th century was really an elder statesman of American science, he weighed in and said, there's no question that there is intelligent life on Mars. It became really that ingrained.
But it was not because fresh evidence had emerged.
Well, it was sort of that fresh evidence had emerged. But Percival Lowell was, among other things, an erudite man. He would give these lectures. He would write magazine articles in a fashion that today seems kind of stilted. But back then was seen as very intellectual and punny. He loved puns. So he was seen as very clever, and he really pushed this idea quite seriously. But also, now remember, this was, of course, the 1890s and the beginning of the 20th century. Photography was still pretty young, particularly when it came to astrophotography, taking pictures of celestial bodies like planets. So most of the depictions of the so-called canals on Mars were drawings that astronomers made. And so you had to trust that the astronomer was seeing things properly and drawing them things properly. Well, Lowell decided the way to get around that was to figure out how to take good photographs of Mars. And he had his team at his observatory, which was in and still is in Flagstaff, Arizona, develop new techniques of photography. And by 1907, he had thousands of these tiny little pictures of Mars. You couldn't make them any larger because they were so grainy, you wouldn't see anything. But these quarter-inch photographs of Mars that he claimed and the public bought showed without any doubt that the lines were there. Now, of course, even if the lines were there, that doesn't mean they're canals. But he'd been talking about it for so long that that's when the Wall Street Journal said, we have proof of life, intelligent life on Mars.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to David Baron about his book on the human obsession and delight in Mars. The planet, of course, we're talking about the planet. David, what's the scientific consensus now about those canals?
Well, so I don't want to give everything away. I don't want to be a spoiler, but let's say that the...
Now, come on.
Clearly there are no canals on Mars. There is no civilization there. This was all, you know, you were looking at a planet that at its closest is 35 million miles away. And at that time, the only way to see it was through Earth-bound telescopes. So you're looking through the Earth's atmosphere. So the Earth's atmosphere creates distortion. The telescope creates distortion. The eye creates distortion. You know, eyes can very easily be tricked by optical illusions. So the question came along, are these lines really there at all? Or is it some figment of either the imagination of the mind or the way the eye perceives the planet's surface? And it was probably a combination of all those things. But eventually, the astronomical community essentially erased those lines from Mars altogether.
Has the magic of Mars been dissipated by the fact that we've been there now several times? I mean, not humans, but at least we've put machines on the surface of the planet.
The amazing thing about Mars is it just keeps it keeps compelling our interest. I mean, we keep learning new things about it. We know there's no civilization there. We know that there are no canals, but we continue to learn fascinating things. I mean, it's only in the last few decades we've learned that Mars was once very Earth-like. There's evidence that water once flowed. It once had a thick atmosphere. It likely was habitable several billion years ago. Now, was it inhabited? We don't know. But there's a great mystery. There are several places in the solar system that are thought to be the most likely places to have life. Mars is certainly near or at the top of that list. NASA has the Perseverance rover right now that's picking up rock samples or drilling, coring rock samples from bedrock and storing them, hopefully to be brought back to Earth eventually to see if there might be evidence of fossilized life there. We're talking about microbes, not canal-building intelligent beings, but still that's a source of fascination. And you mentioned Elon Musk. He's not the only one who has this idea that we should start moving to Mars. There's a society called the Mars Society. It's been around for almost 30 years, made up a lot of quite serious scientists, some from NASA, who are pushing the idea that human beings should start sending some of us scouts to Mars with the idea of eventually making it a second Earth. I don't think we've lost our fascination. It's just changed.
This extraordinary notion that Mars might be a last refuge for the very, 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 very rich of the human race, presumably after we've exhausted this planet, after we've destroyed this planet. Is that the idea? Then we shoot off to Mars and start all over again.
Oh, I sure hope not. I mean, that is certainly the way it's been depicted in some ways, and maybe that's the way Elon Musk thinks about it. But I don't think so. He has said he wants to make it so that anyone with a middle-class lifestyle would have enough money to go buy a ticket to Mars and start living there. I mean, I think that's wildly optimistic that would happen anytime soon. But he wants to build a new civilization down there. Now, in my book, 120 years ago, when people were talking about Mars and this magical civilization there, we were projecting onto the planet our own hopes and dreams, the idea that there could be a better world out there. Mars was the better world that we should emulate. And I think we're seeing a very similar thing today. Now, folks like Elon Musk talk about Mars being a better world that we will create. We will start over again. We will build a new civilization that doesn't have the problems we have here on Earth.
Exactly now, the same argument.
Right. And of course, we were fooling ourselves back then. And I think we're fooling ourselves now to think that we can start over and not bring our problems with us. But does that mean that I think it's a bad idea to go to Mars or to dream about finding a way to get there? I don't think so, because the dream itself is very powerful. The dream of Martians back over 100 years ago helped inspire the rise of science fiction. In fact, inspired the very scientists who went on to develop the first rockets that could get us to outer space. And I think sometimes it takes a dreamer. Elon Musk is a man who's very complex and there's a lot about him I don't like. But sometimes it takes a visionary, a dreamer, someone who's maybe a little crazy to push us to think have new ideas that really do push us to some new level. And that's what Lowell did with his crazy ideas about Mars back then. I don't know if Musk is going to do it now, but I'm all for having some aspirations to start going to Mars while protecting the Earth, not as an escape from an Earth that we're going to let die off. But eventually, we are going to need to spread out, because someday, it may not be for a billion years, but someday there will be a cataclysm that strikes Earth. And if you're thinking in the really, really, really long term, humankind will need to spread out onto another planet eventually.
It seems to me that you started out with this project to expose bunkum, to show what nonsense all of this was, but that you came in the end to really admire the imaginative leaps that are involved in the belief in Mars, in the romance and the power of this planet.
That's exactly right. I thought I was going to be writing a cautionary tale, and it is a cautionary tale. We have to be careful not to get so caught up in believing things that we want to be true that we ignore the evidence showing that, in fact, it is all bunkum. But at the same time, there's a great power in imagination. And there's a wonderful quote from Albert Einstein, and I won't get it right. But Einstein himself said that imagination is a critical aspect of science.
More important than knowledge, he said. Imagination
is
more important than knowledge, for knowledge is limited, whereas imagination embraces the entire world.
Boy, I set you up really well for that. That's exactly right.
I'm fully prepared.
And I think that's right. It's sometimes being too conservative in science is not so good. We need to leave room for imagination, because that is what pushes us forward in discovery and exploration.
But David, in the end, it's the truth that matters.
I agree completely. But until we know the truth, sometimes it's imagination that pushes us to find out what the truth is.
When you were growing up with those comic books and things, I grew up with them as well. Martians with bug eyes and bald heads, and they were so present in our imaginations. But are kids growing up with that now, or is that over?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I get the sense that Martians are less common in comic books and so forth. Aliens may still be out there. But still, people sometimes use Martian as a synonym for alien. People still talk about if a man from Mars came to Earth, what would he think? It's still part of our lexicon and part of our culture.
If a man from Mars came to Earth, he would build an enormous crane on the side of a building that is being constructed in any number of the world's cities, David. But that's perhaps another issue entirely. There's no other planet, is there, that has this power?
Not in our solar system, no. Interesting, one other reason I thought that the book had some relevance today is we now know of more than 5,000 planets outside our solar system. The James Webb Space Telescope and other new observatories and spacecraft are looking for detecting these other planets around other stars and starting to look for signs of life, to see what the atmospheres are made of, to see if that might suggest life. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 10, 20 years, there's talk of planets around other stars for which there's really good evidence of life. And we may see a similar sort of mania start up.
But for us mortals, there's a kind of, we're being overwhelmed now with planets. And so there's a sense that let's just stick with the ones we know. And the one we think we know best is Mars.
Well, and it is our close neighbor. Venus is our other close neighbor, but no one wants to go to Venus. You'd be crushed and seared if you went to the surface of the planet there. Mars really is a little Earth. And seeing pictures of it, it looks a heck of a lot like Earth. You can imagine standing there. It almost looks like a landscape from an old Western, an old movie.
Oh, it looks like Utah, you mean?
It precisely, exactly.
David?
And, yeah.
Would you go there if you could?
Oh, gosh, no.
Why not?
Well, first of all, I'm 61 years old, and I'll leave it to someone younger. But, it's going to take at least 6 to 8 months to get there. You'd be stuck there for probably another 8 months before you could come home. Mars is a terrible place. It would want to kill you from the extraordinarily thin atmosphere to the toxic soils, to the dust storms that can envelop the whole planet, to the radiation that comes down onto the surface that you're not protected from. I'm not saying people can't go there. We'll figure out how to do it and hopefully do it safely.
But not
you. And there are young, not me, but there are young people who are ready to go. And I'm all for it. I mean, they should go safely. But I would love to see someone standing on the surface of Mars while I'm still alive on Earth.
David, thank you for joining us on Late Night Live.
David, it was my pleasure.
I've been speaking to David Barron. David's book is The Martians, the true story of an alien craze that captured turn-of-the-century America, and it's published by Norton.